Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd. It's Season 8, Episode 69, and it's playoff week. Of course, the Steelers on a bye this week, Dave, as we get ready for the wild card matchups coming up Saturday afternoon and night, and then two more games on Sunday. Should be a fun weekend of football here the next 2 weeks. But for the Steelers, kind of, you know, just a chance to regroup, get set. And I think, you know, focus internally and get healthy here as they get ready for finding out their opponent over the next couple of days.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we had this another mini drama, of course, that we covered the other day with Todd Haley, and we'll address a little bit more of that later in the show. But I'm enjoying this week because I'm able to focus back on some things that happened statistics-wise with the Steelers, specifically with Ben Roethlisberger. I had a chance last night to go back and watch rewatch a few Jaguars games, and it's a great day to be alive right now. You don't have to worry about the Steelers winning or losing this week.
Yeah, and it's there's a lot of fun stuff we're going to do here, kind of today and over the next couple podcasts, just to preview. One of our listeners, Mark, was kind enough to go back to, he asked us, sent us an email and asked us if we had looked at our preseason predictions to see how we did. And I said, that's a great idea. We will go by, you know, I'll go back when I have a chance to check it all out. And he was actually kind enough to go to our, podcast from Friday, right before the season opener against the Browns, and catalog all our preseason predictions. So Dave, we'll bear our, the emperor wears no clothes. We missed on a couple, but I will say overall, actually, I think we did a pretty good job, and we both picked the Steelers going 13-3, so we can collectively pat ourselves on the back for that.
Yeah, I like, you know, normally my 10-6 prediction is where I like to go with them, but you know, I had a feeling it'd be a little bit better, you know, some better than that. Lord, you go back and look at their losses now, you think, you know, and how they happened, you think there was a good possibility this team could have probably went or should have probably went undefeated, right?
Well, not undefeated, but 15-1. Certainly could have gone 15-1. I mean, they weren't winning that Jags game from the get-go. But, you know, obviously the Patriots game could have turned easily and the Bears game in overtime. And, you know, very easily a player, too. They definitely go 15-1. But, hey, anyway, 13-3. So we'll do that probably on Monday. We'll take a look at some of the work that Dave's done here this week. We'll kind of review the performance because, you know, a lot's going to get lost in the playoffs depending on how the Steelers play. I mean, if they go in the first round of the playoffs and lose, everything about this 13-3 season will go by the board. So we'll give our thoughts without having the knowledge of what happened to the rest of the season. We'll kind of do a regular season review and give our thoughts on performance, which I don't think is probably – Dave, my gut feel here without us having thought about it or gone through it at all. My gut feel is, as individuals, I don't think this team's going to grade as high as it is collectively going to what you would think it would be with a 13-3 record.
You mean on individual performances?
Yeah.
Well, look, I mean, offensive line, I think individually they play well, right?
Well, yeah, I don't want to do it right now, but I just that's just gut feel of I don't think, you know, you think 13-3, you think everybody's going to be above the line, and certainly not everybody was above the line of expectations for their performance.
No, this is not an invincible team, especially on a defensive side of the ball with some individual performances. I see where you're going on it, but I mean, couldn't we really say the same thing about all 12 teams in the playoffs, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think the problem is, I guess, you know, when you look at the Steelers and the Patriots specifically, both those teams were, you know, USA Today picking the Patriots to go 16-0. Everybody kind of across the board picking the Steelers to win at least 10 games. I guess the Steelers didn't necessarily exceed expectations because expectations are so high. Somebody like the Rams, the Jags, you know, those guys are all going to, you know, I would imagine across the board, I mean, even Blake Bortles, who had, you know, kind of an average quarterback season, probably exceeded expectations. So I guess that's the difference. It's why people ask you, Mike Tomlin or Kevin Colbert going to win Coach of the Year, Executive of the Year, Belichick or whomever? No, they're never going to win it because expectations are always that they're going to be right there, right?
Right. Well, when you do what you're supposed to do, you know, you don't get the award for it usually.
Okay, so the story of the day, for those who haven't had a chance to see it yet, and I imagine a lot of you won't read it, so we'll kind of recap it the best we can, is ESPN came out, the magazine, and it's the feature on the website with a, you know, kind of front and center tell-all behind-the-scenes story of what's going on with the Patriots this season. And basically the headline on the website right now is Patriots on the Brink, a 40-year-old quarterback, a furious coach, and cracks starting to show. And, you know, the question being for Kraft, Brady, and Belichick, is this the beginning of the end? So this is by Seth Wickersham, who's a very good investigative reporter. And as he noted today on the various talk shows on ESPN and ESPN2, et cetera, that, you know, he's not the only guy reporting this. And this isn't necessarily, if you lived in Boston, necessarily breaking earth-shattering news. It's just kind of an in-depth story behind the scenes of what's going on. So, Dave, you had a chance to look at it. Why don't you give us an early take on that?
Well, first of all, you know, the way it was billed, you know, on social media and all like that, you know, I was expecting a little bit more of a bombshell, you know, and you know, but I, once again, I'm the same guy that thought 50 Shades of Grey was about a colorblind woman. So boy, was I wrong. let's go through it. I mean, Alex Guerrero is a guy. I mean, there's been some recent reports about him and his supposed banishment from the Patriots facility. I find it kind of maybe believable, the aspect that he's included in that. The other stuff, though, for the most part, I consider a lot of white noise, David. My takeaway was it was you have a lot of people working together in the same building together for as long as they have, and you have the amount of success that you have. There's going to be some people that, you know, that probably didn't get on your nerves at first, get on your nerves later, and certain people clamoring to get their piece of recognition of why the team has been so successful. And, you know, the whole Jimmy Garoppolo thing, though, to be honest with you, and Brady, you know, in so many words, forcing the Patriots to trade him. Look, we live in a salary cap world too, and a free agency world. They really didn't have a choice. I didn't feel, but to trade Garoppolo. Now, could they maybe have gotten a little bit more than what they did, or should they have gotten a little bit more for him than what they did? Maybe, but they stood a chance of not getting anything except compensatory pick for him had they not done anything by this year's trade deadline. And I don't think there's anybody, the way Brady has played this season, that thinks he's close to being, you know, a year away from being done or whatnot. And, you know, I found a lot of that kind of being white noise. And to be honest with you, my whole takeaway from the piece was, okay. And, to me, it's not the bombshell that I think several are going to try to make it out to be. And as, of course, the Patriots beat writers come a running, defending the organization and trying to poke as many holes as they can into Seth's story. So is it the distraction? Is it going to be a distraction that many are thinking that it might turn out to be? I don't think so.
Okay, the perfect look. Largely, I agree with just about everything you said. The Garoppolo thing here is any decision that had to be made. I mean, who holds the cards here? Jimmy holds the cards. I mean, he's going to, you know, he's got to sign a contract to be a backup to continue in New England. So this was, you know, people can make it out to be whatever they want between Kraft and Brady and Belichick. And it, for those, the idea was, the thought in the story is that Belichick wanted to keep Garoppolo and, you know, transition, whether it was next year or quickly thereafter, to Garoppolo. But the point of the matter, and Kraft and Brady apparently went to Kraft and said, you know, I'm going to continue to play. And so you got to make a decision here. And because Garoppolo holds the cards, Dave, I agree with you. They, you know, it's a salary cap. You got to pay him roughly $20 million bucks just to be your backup. Can you afford to do that in today's NFL? So to me, those are just decisions that every organization has to make. To me, the story is that it's a story. And basically, there's a guy for Football Outsiders who tweeted earlier today. He said this: variations of the Patriots stuff have gone on in about 90% of NFL organizations over the years. It's just not interesting in most cases, but it isn't the Patriots. Okay, well, here's my answer to that. That's why it's interesting, because it goes on everywhere. No organization can avoid this stuff. And the Patriots have avoided it for so long. It's a story because now we're seeing behind the curtain that there might be some disagreement. It's been this whole kumbaya session for 15 years with Bob Kraft, with Bill Belichick, and Tom Brady, that everybody loves everybody and they just go out and win every damn week and every damn season, that, you know, that it's been great. And so when there's rifts and some, you know, conflict, that is the story. And the reason I think this is so interesting is Dave and I spent a lot of our time on Wednesday talking about Todd Haley and Ben Roethlisberger, like it's, you know, something, you know, this rift might cause, you know, one to leave, or if something happens. To me, it's such a non-story if you can do your job. And clearly, in both cases, the Steelers, with whatever the relationship is between Ben and Todd, is they've been able to do their jobs. And obviously, whatever the situation is in New England, those guys have been able to go out and win consistently. It has not carried over into performance on the field. So, you know, I'm with you, Dave. Look, the ESPN's promoting this because, you know, they want eyeballs on it. And, it, you know, the Patriots are interesting and mostly hated around the country and beloved, obviously, in New England. But, yeah, I just think that the story is it's the Patriots. And, you know, we talk about this soap opera that has been the Steelers in 2017. My goodness, you know, the stuff that's going on in New England pales in comparison.
Yeah, I would agree. And plus, Tom Brady and Jimmy Garoppolo share the same agent as well. Look, I mean, who in their right mind thought the Patriots are going to be able to keep both those guys? I mean, sure, would they have liked? Would Belichick have liked the perfect succession plan to Brady and sign Garoppolo kind of, you know, less than key franchise quarterback money and go from there? Sure he would. But I mean, the reality is, and I'm sure Yee knew it as well, and Garoppolo probably knew it deep down inside. Look, if I get a chance to hit free agency, I'm going to cash in big time, because I am. You know, outside of maybe Kirk Cousins, I am the hottest commodity right now, because a lot of my commodity is still unknown. You know, my upside is unknown. A lot of people will pay for that if they have, if a player has certain intangibles and all. So, and look, you know, is Brady this ultra ego? You know, the article says that several, you know, young players call him sir, and and stuff like that. I assume that's possible. I mean, the guy is almost godlike, right? And, you know, his training methods, he probably does feel that what he and Guerrero do together is the end-all, do-all. Of course, James Harrison will probably tell you that what he does is the end-all, do-all that allows himself to function at the highest level possible at, you know, at an age where most players aren't able to. I came away, you know, think it's almost, I shrugged my shoulders really more than anything, David.
I think we're on the same page. So it's less of a bombshell for us, and I think a lot of people in Pittsburgh, than it will be nationally. And look, here's the deal. We have seen guys get toward the end of their career and teams have to make decisions about them. Look, it wasn't all wine and roses with Troy Polamalu and the Steelers on the way out the door. I mean, there's a strong sense that Troy wanted to play another year and that the Steelers didn't want him to. I mean, you know, Heath Miller went off in the sunset on his own choosing, but very few players do it that way. We've seen that with guys in the Steelers organization. And with Tom Brady, I mean, look, Troy Polamalu is as iconic as you're going to get in Pittsburgh, but, you know, he pales kind of historically compared to Tom Brady because Tom Brady plays quarterback and maybe, you know, some consider him the greatest quarterback ever. And when you're making decisions about what to do with him, there's going to be friction. I mean, look at Joe Montana in San Francisco. That did not end well. He ended his career in San Francisco. You can go through the list of guys. And Tom Brady's at that point, and Tom Brady is Dave and I talked right before we got on the air. There's one thing about this team is I think Belichick's maybe his greatest asset, or his greatest asset is obviously talent evaluation and knowledge of the history and the game of football. I think he probably supersedes anybody we've ever seen. But the other thing is, I will say to his credit, to Mike Tomlin's credit, one of the things they're great at is subverting their own egos to the greater good. And, you know, maybe some of this here, you're seeing Brady's ego come in here with his trainer, with his TB12 stuff, and thinking about, I don't know if he's thinking about his legacy, but just thinking about, you know, where the direction that his life's taking at this point. You know, maybe that's some of the issue, and who has Bob Kraft's ear? You know, who's closer to Bob Kraft? I don't know the answer to that, but this is nothing new. The reason it's interesting, as I say, is because for 15 years it's been so harmonic between these three men.
And you know what I think's funny is you take both of the fan bases of the Patriots and the Steelers, and whenever something perceived negative or something comes out with one, the other fan base jumps on it like this, like it's the hugest. You know, like it's the biggest thing of the year, and beat writers do it as well. You know, the Patriots beat. Look, I was glad we had Ben Volen on, a few weeks ago when we did. But if there, you know, he is a giant Patriots cheerleader. If you ask me, would you agree?
Probably not. Not to that degree. I wouldn't call him a cheerleader. I think he's.
I don't think he's fair and balanced. I'll put it to you that way. I think he almost has kind of an entitlement attitude. You know, and I think a lot of them do that cover the Patriots have the entitlement attitude. I cover the best organization. You know, that's why I know more than you. And on the flip side, Ray Fittipaldo from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, who I think Ray does a great job covering the team. One tweet he has an hour ago that I'm staring at, he says, "And you thought the Steelers were team turmoil." That's a little much, right?
No, because I'm tweeting the same thing right now. I think we've talked about how, you know, the Steelers this year have been, it's been crazy, all the kind of off the field stuff. I think
give me a break. Just, I mean, what has happened with the Steelers this year and their turmoil, to me, trumps what we just read in this ESPN article by 15.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yes, I agree with that. In fact, I said, as far as off the field nonsense, turmoil, and crazy things happening, they Steelers this season.
You just broke up.
I agree with you.
You just broke up. Repeat what you just said. You,
Sorry, I said my tweet was, I realize the Pat story is such a big deal, but as far as off-the-field nonsense, turmoil, and crazy things happening, they can't hold a candle to the Steelers this season.
Right, and but what I'm saying is Ray tweeted out, and you thought the Steelers were
okay, but I don't know what that has to do with Ray being a homer or not a homer.
No, it's over the top. I mean, he's insinuating, boy, you thought the Steelers had problems. Look at these problems.
Yeah, well, so his opinion's different than ours. I mean, I don't think So getting back to your original point here, depends the Pats beat writers being homers. I don't follow enough of them closely to have a strong opinion about that. But I will ask the question: do you think the Steelers beat writers are homers?
Yeah, I think a lot of them are, and a lot of them get real sensitive when an ESPN or a national guy beats them to a story or you know something along those lines.
No, I don't know if they get sensitive to it. I think they get sensitive to getting hammered on Twitter when national guys break a trade or a something because it's nobody's breaking anything. If somebody in the NFL organization calls Adam Schefter with news that nobody else has been given, that's not – you know, it's the NFL hands out stuff to their guys. And so that's why things occasionally get broken nationally rather than locally, because the Steelers, obviously any transaction or things they do, they have to turn that in to the NFL office. And then the NFL office disseminates that to their guys so that they have stories. Nobody's doing great investigative reporting to get a trade story or to get, you know, any kind of transaction that happens. And that's, I think that, you know, I watch it happen because, you know, people come at me at times on that stuff when it's not, obviously that's not even my job. If somebody, you know, Adam Schefter, there's nothing, not taking anything away from Adam Schefter because there are a lot of things he does well, but a lot of these guys who break stories, they just get handed the info by the NFL. And I think that's why, I do see guys get constantly, you know, harping on anybody who covers the Steelers for, you know, why are the national guys getting that stuff? And, you know, the national guys are just getting handed a piece of paper or given a text.
All right. Well, in the end, I don't see this as big a deal as it's going to be made out on over the course of the next 2 or 3 days. My the only thing I wish would have happened is why didn't this come out 2 days before the Steelers possibly play the Patriots?
Right. The the funny thing is now. There is the interesting thing, I think, for those of us getting back to the football side of things.
Let me interrupt you, too. I am the guy that would rather write about what happens on the field day in and day out instead of off the field stuff, anything off the field kind of stuff, because I guess because I've been through so much of my life, you know, I think I've been there and seen almost.
You gloss over it, right?
Right. I nothing's a to me nothing's an overly big deal to me, and I didn't get into I didn't start blogging and doing what I do to talk about
soap opera stuff.
Right, soap opera stuff.
Well, literally, you took the words out of my mouth as I was about to say. I'm saying. So let's get to the actual on-the-field implications in this story, which are significant. There is a suggestion that it's possible that Bill Belichick could walk away sooner rather than later. I mean, there's no expectation. There was no expectation this week that Bill Belichick's not going to be the head coach of the Patriots this year, next year, and as far as the eye can see. And this suggests that that may not be the case. Now, I'd still bet – like I said yesterday or Wednesday, I bet a lot of money that Todd Haley's still going to be the offensive coordinator. I bet, you know, even more that Bill Belichick's going to be the coach of the Patriots for the next couple of years. But who knows? The way this sounded, I guess it's open for discussion.
Well, I mean, everything has a beginning and an end, right? And man-to-man has coached in the NFL for so long. To me, I would be shocked if Belichick walks away in the next – 2 or 3 years, I think. To me, the biggest challenge for him would be after Brady's gone, because let's face it, Brady and Belichick are forever going to be tied to the hip.
Yeah, well, then the question is,
people are
it gonna, sounded like Belichick wanted – the article at least suggests Belichick wanted Garoppolo to be his quarterback. Maybe not this coming season, 2018. But, you know, if you sign him to a four-year deal this year, so he'd sit for one more year and then be the quarterback in 2019, which is essentially pushing Brady out the door if you sign him to that deal. And that's, I think, what Brady was trying to protect and what Belichick was thinking of the best of the organization. So, you know, they did trade both their backup quarterbacks here over the course of, you know, 10 weeks, which, I mean, they got Hoyer out of it, but, you know, they don't have a succession plan.
Right, and they're probably going to try to get one in this year's draft, right?
You would think. I mean, I can't imagine they're going to get one of the top four, but top five. But who knows? You know, who knows what they do?
Maybe it would not shock me. They're the kind of team that would Belichick's and Kraft. That's the kind of team that would possibly try to trade up if one of those guys. I mean, look, there's a lot of quarterbacks, perceived quarterbacks in this upcoming draft that people think, could potentially be franchise quarterbacks.
Mason Rudolph would be a guy. You know, maybe they take him at the end of the first round.
Right. And look, I mean, how far is a guy like Darnold going to fall? You know,
not out of the top three.
I think it's too early. I mean, I've watched Darnold play. I've watched Rosen play. I've watched a kid in Wyoming play. But I haven't. You know, I haven't gotten into and serious breaking down their film yet. All I can go off of is what several, that I know guys that I kind of trust write and all like that. But even so, if you base your stuff off what other people write want to make good decisions, you need to watch the tape is what I'm trying to say. But where I'm at right now, I would not be surprised if Darnold fell out of the top three where I am right now. Now, that might not be my end-all, do-all. But regardless, I could see the Patriots somehow getting themselves in a position to draft a quarterback in the first round this year. Because let's face it, Bill Belichick's drafts overall haven't been great, right? I mean, he's more of a guy that will bring in guys that fit what he does. I don't think he's overly known as a guy that's great in the draft room and all, you know. So, but back to what I was saying, Belichick's what, 65 or so? I mean, how many more years do we expect him to coach anyway?
Look, he's good. He's capable of coaching 10 more years. It's not, you know, he can coach. You can coach for a long time as long as, look, Dick LeBeau's coaching and God knows how old he is. So he's not restricted in terms of mental function. If his health is good, he could coach, you know, as long as we're going to be doing this podcast, I'll tell you that.
I think it'd be more of a challenge to Belichick to say I can do it without Brady.
But I don't think it's not a challenge he's not going to relish. I mean, you know, the guy done it without Brady most of his career, and this has been a great run. But apparently he was looking to do it without Brady with Garoppolo and continue to move on. So I mean, obviously it's just by definition it's not going to be as successful. But I don't think that means he's not going to relish the challenge.
All right, I think a lot of listeners now are probably about done with Patriots Depot.
Okay, so let me. I want to just to get to Broncos Depot. I wanted to get just to one thing if I can find this quickly, because I was thinking about with this article and some of the other things and talking about Mike Tomlin and the Steeler organization and how successful they've been. When you think about Dave, when you think of the best, let's just keep it to the AFC. Think about the best organizations in the AFC. Which ones jump to mind?
On the AFC side, well, obviously the Patriots, the Steelers, the Ravens jump to mind when I think of top organizations in the AFC. Wow. You know, Kansas City, I think, and Denver.
So this is the headline in an article in yesterday's Denver Post. And it says, there was a time not so long ago when John Elway could end a season and say the Broncos expectations had not diminished. that plan A remained the only plan, that competing for a Super Bowl title was the only option. That was then. The new reality is the Broncos general manager admitting his latest annual reconstruction will require a bit more work and more time. Broncos finished 9-11 this year. And I think one of the things that, you know, sometimes we forget in our critique, or certainly I know a lot of some of our listeners may forget, is just how damn hard it is to be at the elite level in the NFL every single season. And you go back and, you know, when's the last time the Steelers were 5-11? Well, I'll tell you when the last time it was. 1988 is the last time the Steelers were 5-11. Now, they've had a couple six-win seasons in there. But 2003 was the last time the Steelers had a losing record. 2003, they were 6-10. And then you go to before that, it was 1999. So since the Heinz Field has existed, the Steelers have had a losing record one time. It's just, you know, it's incredibly impressive that, you know, you think, and I think your list was the same as my list of these good teams. And you see they consistently have seasons where they don't make the playoffs and they have losing records. And, you know, the Steelers, certainly there have been some seasons when they didn't make the playoffs, but it is few and far between in the big picture, certainly compared to most other NFL franchises.
Well, you know, I think, you know, we hear all the time about the culture and the kind of player that the Steelers kind of look for in the draft. Obviously, they build through the draft other than free agency. They are very picky and cheap, if you will, when it comes to free agency most of the time. And they like, I think culture has a lot to do with it, with a kind, you know, how and keeping the right mix of older veterans to pass on, you know, the kind of tradition and culture of the team to the younger players. There, in my opinion, there a lot goes into building a successful organization in the NFL in a salary cap driven world. Now, on the flip side, could there be two organizations more different than maybe the Patriots and the Steelers?
I think the Patriots are unique to the NFL in terms of, you know, I do think there's a belief now that across the league that the tried and true way to build an organization is through the draft, and you kind of maybe add a couple pieces outside that. As you pointed out, the Patriots don't do it that way at all. That's where Belichick's talent evaluation kind of supersedes everything in terms of, and it's, you know, the older a guy is and the more NFL film you got on him, maybe that's his genius. He's not great at evaluating 20-year-olds, but, you know, once he sees him play in the league, great assessment of it. But yeah, they're definitely different in terms of how they go about things.
And look, both organizations obviously have a franchise quarterback too, and have for quite a while. And you know, I hate to keep going back to this in almost every argument, but if you don't have a quarterback, you're not going to win in the NFL. And look, I mean, it's going to be interesting when. And, you know, maybe we'll still be having podcasts and all, but when we get to the post-Roethlisberger era, if you will, to see, you know, if the Steelers are able to compete. But even so, competing won't be good enough for this fan base, because if they go 10-6 post-Roethlisberger and don't win, aren't in the Super Bowl, it's fire everybody. You know, some lean years, you would have to think, for both the Patriots and the Steelers are around the corner, we think. But, you know, can you, especially if you don't draft a quarterback, you know, a lot of people tweet me now, David, saying, oh, they didn't do it last year. They have got to get a quarterback, a franchise quarterback this year. They absolutely have to. This is the year that they have to get the franchise quarterback. Just because you draft one doesn't mean he's going to turn out to be, be the guy that can win, you know, four Super Bowls for you.
I mean, that's a given, right? I mean, you know, how many of the top quarterbacks are even successful?
But I don't think a lot of I don't think you and I understand that. But I wonder sometimes some people listening to this podcast. Now, granted, I think they understand it.
They just hope that they find a guy quickly. Granted, and when a guy throws one interception in a preseason game, he's a bust.
Right. Now, granted, I think that, and I'm not playing up to our listeners here. A regular listener of ours, I think is more.
He will never be accused of playing up to our listeners.
Yeah, evidently some of these. I don't know. I've gotten some rave reviews through emails lately. Have I not? I mean, I could. I don't know. I some people just.
That's the two different things. I said you will not be accused. He was praised. The most recent rave review was for killing people.
Really. But for the most part, where I'm going with this, I think if someone is invested enough to and can put up with my grasp of the or lack of grasp of the English language and my stuttering is I think we do a good job at educating overall. And I think overall our listeners, if someone that's going to tune in three times a week is an educated listener and not just Joe Yinzer on Twitter.
Right. Somebody's going to waste 90 minutes with us. They're dedicated.
Right. And I get it that we get some emails that said that say, don't talk about Joe Yinzer, you know. But it's part of what I have to deal with, and if I have
it's also part of it is part of you know Pittsburgh and the Steeler Nation, and you know it's kind of some of the fun of it too. Look, I mean, you know, not everything's all serious all the time.
Right, and look, I'll self-defecate myself and deprecate probably a lot more than you do. So take that, but
yeah. For sure,
but I can from where I come from. It's easy to do. Back to my original thought here. Go back and look at the list of Super Bowl winners over the course of 20 years, and you see Brady, Manning, Flacco, the other Manning, Rodgers or Favre. Breeze, who am I missing? Warner, Aikman, Young Montana, it's usually one of like six or seven guys, right? You know, that now there've been the occasional Buccaneers, in here and you could probably even consider Joe Flacco and the Ravens, a few years ago as kind of being an outlier, the Flacco and that poorly defended pass in that game against the Broncos, you know, where the main
season's over. Yep.
Right. Right. You know, they're not in the Super Bowl, and Denver is, and Manning probably gets another one then, you know? So, my whole gist of it is, and it's not rocket science, is if you don't have a quarterback, you're not going to win in this league. And it'll be interesting to see, how the Steelers are able to get past the Roethlisberger era. And I think we're still a year or two away from that happening. But deep down inside,
let me ask you this question: if you took Ben off the Steelers and Tom off the Patriots and gave them quarterback X, average NFL quarterback, same guy, which franchise is better off?
Who's the X? You want to put Landry Jones in a situation?
No. Just X, average NFL quarterback, the same result, the same caliber player. Whose team's better without their quarterback?
Right now, I'm going to say the Steelers.
I agree. I think the Steelers team's better than the Patriots without their quarterback, and maybe significantly better. Certainly on offense, I think significantly better. And maybe both sides. I think the Steelers are better without their quarterback. Without the two quarterbacks,
could any other team, or other quarterback, other than Tom Brady, did what the Patriots accomplished last year in the Super Bowl?
Maybe guys could get the Patriots to where they've been. I think this year.
No, I'm talking just the Super Bowl.
I don't think the Patriots.
Just a Super Bowl
come
alone.
Back? Yeah, you know.
Huh?
I mean, can guys engineer comebacks? I mean, you know, Frank Reich did it. I mean, you know, guys have games.
Yeah. Well, you know, it all comes back down to the quarterback every time. And it'd be interesting to see how both franchises are able to do once the quarterback's out of the picture.
Yeah. Okay, let's a couple of things. Ryan Shazier's news. The little info we got was good.
Yeah, he's got feeling back, according to his father in that interview on PXI. He's got feeling back in his legs again. It doesn't trying to read in between the lines. His father was asked point blank, has he seen his son walk or anything like that? And, you know, he didn't want to answer any questions along those lines. So I'm going to assume, which is dangerous, that hasn't happened yet. But he did say he's making progress every day. You know, he gave kind of the obvious answer when asked if he thinks his son will play football again, and he said yes along those lines. Now, his father is an extremely, you know, and that family is an extremely spiritual family. His dad, of course, is a preacher and along those lines. But it obviously sounds better, and I think Melanie on Twitter, @GirlSurgeon, tweeted like a series of four tweets with her thoughts on it as well too, and I think she's got something coming in the next few days on maybe some speculation as off of what Ryan's dad had to say. But I think right now, and this, you know, this is just me speculating, I think it would be a little much to expect Ryan to be ready, you know, by next season, and read into that what you will.
Concur. I mean, I'll be shocked if Ryan Shazier. Maybe I'll be shocked if he ever plays football again. Obviously, you know.
I wanted to say that, but I didn't want to come off. Look, this is a delicate situation.
Sure, and everybody. I was going to say.
I don't
want to
come
with the obvious caveat that we all hope the best for Ryan Shazier. It's a given, right? I mean, you know.
Right. I don't want to come off and sound cold and well, that's it, you know. But I mean, just, and look, I'm not a doctor or anything close to it. But you know, just right now, I would be shocked if he ever plays down a football again.
Yeah, I would too. And you know, we don't know the ramifications of the long-term diagnoses. But you know, you have to assume that once you have an injury like this, or I would assume that you may put yourself at greater risk. And once you've gone through something like this, I can imagine you don't want to go through it ever again. So who knows? Look, everybody knows we're hoping for the best. I would, in the short term here, you know, getting from where he is today to imagining him on a football field in 9 months from now would be somewhat miraculous. So, okay, we'll see where it goes. On the best story of the week, bar none, is what has come out of this touchdown by the Bengals.
And whoa. I thought you were going to go a different way there. I thought you were going to hit the Todd Haley thing with the bar none. You missed it.
I was actually going to go feel-good story. But, yeah, the fans in Buffalo and elsewhere have donated over $300,000 now to Andy Dalton's charity and over $52,000 to Tyler Boyd's fund for youth football in Western Pennsylvania. I mean, that's just extraordinary. And the Bills apparently just sent the Bengals like, I don't know, 1,000 wings or something. Did I just read that on Twitter a second ago? They sent them a – or 1,440 wings. I don't know what that number represents, but some crazy amount of wings in thanks for helping them get in the playoffs. So the touchdown pass from Dalton to Boyd, and Buffalo fans, you know, ponying up $400,000 for good causes, man. It doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah, I agree, but nobody listening to this podcast cares about that. All they care about is the Ravens.
Oh, they do. West Pennsylvania and youth football. Tyler Boyd, come on.
All they care is the Ravens out. the, so, Ra- the the Ravens aren't in the playoffs. Next story. Now, bar none, the best story is, I think, has been this Todd Haley New Year's Eve incident. You missed a perfect opportunity to knock that one out of the park there with that setup there. Todd Haley commented on this after practice, or sort of commented on the incident after practice on Thursday. He says, "A few nights ago, unfortunately, I was in a situation." Don't feel bad, Todd. I've had a few of those situations myself. He says, "The situation, though not of my doing." Yeah, I got you, Todd. Some of these weren't of my doing either. It was the alcohol's doing. "Has been made clear to me by the Steelers that is a non-issue to both the team and the Steelers organization. My sole focus is on preparing for next week's playoff game, so it won't be addressed further." And, you know, I think someone tried to ask him if he was pushed down, and he said, I'm not commenting on. He supposedly, reportedly, suffered a shattered pelvis. Now, he was out, there was video of him out on the practice field walking and throwing. He wasn't running around. I don't know. Shattered pelvis.
You're not walking around with a shattered pelvis.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, Todd Haley looks like he's put together pretty good, right? I mean,
look. He may have got hurt. He's not walking around with a shattered pelvis.
And how old is Todd Haley?
50.
50. And that's how old I am. Now look, I grew up in Northwest Florida, which we call Lower Alabama, for the most part. So in other words, I had my share of butt kickings and dishing out butt kickings. Never once did I come close to shattering my pelvis by getting pushed to the ground. I'm not trying to say he's fragile, but okay. Now the bigger question is: A, is Todd Haley going to magically be in the booth for this next playoff game?
No, not if he's walking around. They're not going to change things.
All right. The next question is, will we hear this come the first playoff game? Turbo, alert, Tequila Cowboy.
Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be good.
I might quit Twitter if that happens. all right, non-issue?
Non-issue. Non-issue.
Unless some video comes out otherwise, I mean, it's unfortunate for him, and, you know, being his wife, it was involved, like, you know, to some degree, probably not overly surprising, but non-issue.
Okay, so what else we have? Any news out of the practice facility?
Antonio Brown on Tuesday was out catching balls off the jugs machine, and, you know, probably not overly surprising or groundbreaking, knowing his, you know, background and all like that.
I'm sure he was doing that today. I mean, you know, gets it off the jugs machine, just got to be able to stand. So I'm sure he's been working on his hands every day.
Yeah, apparently, according to some of his teammates, you know, he was wanting to practice this past week and yada, yada. You know, I think all of us at this point, whatever percentage he's going to be, you're not going to keep him off that field in the divisional round of the playoffs there. So, you know, nothing really new injury-wise. I don't think, even though Mike Tomlin, I think, was listed on the Steelers' schedule this week as you know, possibly taking questions daily after practice per request. I don't think that has happened. Keith Butler, you know, said so many words that, you know, they got to play bigger and bigger moments. The defense does. Yesterday, I haven't read the transcript of what all Haley had to say and all like that. But, I mean, really, what happens this week is really insignificant. You just hope that they get some good full practices in to help ward off any type of rust that you know, may or may not develop.
Yeah, I guess the other story was the Patriots practicing outside in a nor'easter yesterday.
Yeah.
Plus 50 mile an hour winds and 8 inches of snow.
Yeah.
Did Stoops have pads on yesterday? Is that what I heard?
I don't. I haven't gotten that far. I don't know. Let's see. What else do we have here? I mean, not a lot.
I think a playoff game's coming up.
Yeah, why don't we talk a little bit about those? I don't know. I feel like we may have not hit on enough Steelers stuff today for folks, but you know that's kind of to be expected here. But yeah, let's we're already what in 50 minutes into this, so let's hit on some of these playoff games.
All right, Saturday 4:30, Tennessee at Kansas City. The news out of Tennessee is that what's his name's not going. So Murray. It'll be the Derrick Henry show. DeMarco Murray not going in the game. So look, Tennessee's going to have to win this game by playing good defense, pounding the football, you would think, and having Marcus Mariota make a few plays. Adoree Jackson and Tyreek Hill talking about two of the fastest guys in the league. Matched up against one another. Adoree thinks he's faster than Tyreek Hill. They're both 5'10", so that'll be something to keep an eye on if they are actually matched up. David, Tennessee have a chance to win this game? Kansas City's only won two playoff games at Arrowhead in 47 years.
The short answer is no, but if they are going to win it, I think a lot of it's going to have to do with what Marcus Mariota being able to make some plays with his legs, I think. Derrick Henry has looked kind of pedestrian at times, right? And their defense, you know, not overly great. When I think of good defenses this year, I don't think Tennessee is being one of them. I just think the environment and playing in Kansas, I think all that's just going to be too much. And I really expect Kansas City to roll them.
I'm with you. I think they blow them out. And, like we talked about, the Chiefs had that – the Steelers sent them spiraling for 4 or 5 weeks, but they have gotten it back together. Alex Smith has been really good again. His season's really gone under the radar when they had that losing streak, but he's been excellent over the course of the season. They'll obviously have some decisions to make at the quarterback position this offseason. Okay, so we both think they're going to roll them. The line's 8.5. You going to lay it?
Yeah, I'll lay it.
Yeah, I'm going to lay it too. For me, the two NFC games, way more interesting from a on-the-field perspective. And I got to tell you, if you get a chance to read Michael Silver's article on Sean McVay, the 31-year-old head coach for the Rams, it's on NFL.com. It's a great profile. It's a long article. But it's fantastic. If you want a team to root for on the other side, you read that and the Rams might be your team. Dave, they're 5.5-point favorites over the Falcons. Obviously, the game's in L.A. Be interesting to see what the – I always thought too much was made of, you know, L.A. is not going to support football teams. Obviously, nobody's going to support teams generally that don't win. But they obviously – both these teams ended up winning a lot of games. The Chargers won 9 and the Rams won 11. So I don't know what the crowd's going to be like in terms of home field advantage, but they're 5.5-point favorites for an 8:15 Saturday night game. I'm going to take the points, but I'll be rooting hard for the Rams.
Okay. Who's going to win the game though?
Rams.
When you get into the playoffs, I can't help but go with quarterback experience. I can't help it. Goff has had a great season. Gurley's had a great season. I think if you're Atlanta, what do you come into this game? Who do you try to, you know, you want Goff to beat you, I think. I want Goff to beat you. And I think you sell out to stop Gurley at all cost, and you make Goff beat you. On the flip side, look, Wade Phillips has got a great defense there with the Rams. But if you look at those weapons the Atlanta has on offense, they still have Julio Jones. They have Sanu. They have Matt Ryan. They have two very capable running backs. I just got a feeling that Atlanta's going to go in there and get this thing done somehow, some way. So give me Atlanta to win this outright. So obviously I want the points.
Interesting. The one thing is they have Deion Jones at linebacker, who's maybe the fastest linebacker in the NFL. So I imagine he'll have some time trying to match up with Gurley out of the backfield. That's Yeah, they've got weapons too, though. They got Sammy and they got a bunch of other guys. So, yeah, this should be a fun game to watch on Saturday night. And just to give you perspective on the over-unders, the KC Titans game is 44. This one's 48. The low one of the week, and as you might imagine, comes up Monday at 1 o'clock in Jacksonville. Over-under of 39 with the Jags also an 8.5-point favorite. Same line as in the Chiefs game over the Bills. 8.5, too many?
I know Buffalo's riding on a lot of emotion and all right now, but if even if Shady plays in this game, did you see his reaction when he hurt himself on the field? And is Shady an overly dramatic person? I've never viewed him as that. You could have sworn his season was over right then. He probably thought it was.
He probably thought it was. I mean, we've seen that a couple players this year whose season didn't end when they thought it might be done.
If he's not 80% or
out of the walking boot yesterday.
Yeah, I just don't see how he's going to be able to do some of those. You know, he's not going to be himself. I just can't envision him being himself. And if not, if they can't run the football in this game, I just don't see. I think it goes back to kind of what the Tennessee's chances yep. are. Tennessee's chances here. I think Tyrod Taylor will have to make several plays with his legs. And I think Buffalo is going to have – their defense is going to have to create some short fields, which is possible with a guy like Blake Bortles on the other side. But I think that Jacksonville defense is just too good. And I know Jacksonville's shown some chinks in the armor later in this season, but I just don't see it. I would lay the points in this one. I'll take Jacksonville.
Yeah, I'll take the Bills just because I do expect it to be, you know, the over-under around 40, which means if you're getting 8.5, you know, if you combine them, you only got to keep the other team to 20.
I wonder how Buffalo's going to score.
Well, I mean, that's a legit question. I mean, you know, they're going to have to be able to move the ball on the ground. We'll see if they can do it. But I think Taylor's been better than people realize overall, and he's played well ever since he came back from that benching in San Diego, which – you know, you look at the two guys in here, the Sean McVay and Sean McDermott. That's a little notice to teams looking for. People say there aren't good coaches out there. Look, McDermott got crushed, and rightly so, for benching Tyrod Taylor. But he and his GM, who also came from Carolina, made a ton of moves, really, for the future. And they were still able to get this team into the playoffs. Pretty impressive. And obviously what McVay did in Los Angeles, and also being able to hire the staff that he hired, as you pointed out a million times, getting a defensive coordinator that you need and getting some older guys in there, experienced guys, but still being the leader of the franchise. Pretty great hires, it looks like, for both organizations. But I'll take the Bills in a low-scoring game. The good one, 4:30, the Saints hosting Carolina. These teams have met twice. They're divisional foes. Clearly they've played over-under at 48. Identical. There's the lines and the spreads in these games are the over unders are all very close in the two conferences, very similar. Saints by 6.5. Dave, experience. You got two very experienced quarterbacks in this one with Cam and Drew Brees. I love what the Saints can do, and Drew Brees probably got way less attention than he should have for having a great season, because it was a totally different thing. The running game was so good with Kamara and Ingram that his touchdown passes were, you know, the lowest they've been in 10 years, at I think just 23 or something crazy low like that. But he was great. Their defense so much improved. In Daniel Jeremiah's top 10 rookies, his ranking of the top 10, the Saints had 3. The Steelers had Juju at 6 and T.J. Watt at 9, by the way. But the Saints had obviously Kamara, Lattimore, and then the tackle, however you pronounce the kid's name, R.R. You know how to pronounce his name? Ryan Ramczyk. Is it Ramczyk?
Ramczyk.
Ramczyk, yeah. So I will take the Saints in this one and them putting up a lot of points, like 31-23, just making the cover of 6.5.
Well, that Superdome, or I guess they call it something else, Mercedes-Benz something another, Superdome. That place is gonna be that place is gonna be rocking, big time. Drew Brees. I mean, Drew Brees is a is still a quarterback that can get it done. Look at the running back. So with they can 1-2 you with Kamara and Ingram. They got some wide receivers over there that can.
Obviously- Michael Thomas, he is you know, he's going to be. He might be the fourth guy in the all pro list.
And then you match it up against the Panthers defense, which is really Luke Kuechly and who else, you know,
right.
at this point. And their defensive adjusted net yards per passing attempt this year, 6.2. Can you name any Panthers wide receivers at this point?
So, right, Ted Ginn's gone. The two young guys, the kid from Ohio State, that's all I got. Jenkins, right?
I think you're – let's see here. Obviously McCaffrey over there who gives you a lot of catches out of the backfield.
80-plus catches this year.
And Funchess, they traded away Benjamin. I guess you're talking about Curtis Samuels, who you're talking
the same,
about.
Right, the same as a
You had me confused there.
And myself confused.
I just don't see how, you know, I don't see how they're going to be able to move the football consistently. I don't think they're going to be able to score enough points. That sounds like a simple way to analyze a game, but I think the Saints blow them out at home, David. I really do. I'm laying those points.
All right, so we're that would leave if it plays out like that. That'll leave just the Jags coming to Pittsburgh. Obviously, they set the time on that. I don't know if we mentioned that. If you haven't seen it, Sunday at 1 o'clock on the 14th at Heinz Field, and I haven't seen a weather forecast that far out yet. I know Pittsburgh has been brutally cold this week. It's supposed to be a little bit better next week, and I'm looking on my phone to see if. Next Sunday, high of 29, low of 16 is the early forecast. So, you know, we know when the game's going to be played. Got that in advance.
And obviously, if the Bills win, they play beat Jacksonville. They'll play New England, and then the Steelers will get the winner of Kansas City, Tennessee there. So, you know, it's not hard to kind of decipher the scenarios here. Real quick, we talked – I was thinking long and hard while writing up this article yesterday about the off-season decisions that the Steelers have coming up, right around the corner, if you will. You know, we already talked a little bit about coaching staff decisions and obviously the futures and all like that. I want to revisit this Le'Veon Bell thing. I think my last stance on Le'Veon Bell was that he won't be given the tag.
Your last stance, as in when we talked about it September 1st.
I think we talked about it since then, too. I think we talked about it mid-season. I still stood on the side of I don't think the Steelers will give him the tag again. I thought long and hard about this yesterday while writing up this article and looking back at what Le'Veon Bell did this season and think about Ben staying around another year and the offensive line and all like that. I'm gonna reverse course on my thoughts on this. I think they will. My only concern with this whole thing, David, is the wear and tear on him that he's had this season. But with that said, the Steelers were prepared to give him at least $30 million over the first 2 years last year. And they actually get out cheaper by back-to-back tags on him. So, you shouldn't look at it from a cap hit standpoint. And I keep going back. I think that the thing is revisiting what Kevin Colbert almost tells us every offseason. And that's the fact that you find a way to keep your best players. Damned everything else. And I think that's what it comes down to. Assuming he stays healthy in this playoff run, and look, I mean, this is a guy that could legitimately put up big numbers during the play. Look at the first two games in the playoffs last year, right? I mean, Miami and Kansas City. I mean, he put up big total yards from scrimmage numbers in those games. I think throughout this playoff run, with him having essentially a couple weeks rest now, he could do that again. I mean, and you know, sign of the cross here. You know, Steelers make it to the Super Bowl and yada yada. You know, he could be a determining factor in that. And boy, I mean,
for sure, sure. I mean, he's a top 10 MVP candidate in the league, really. That, I mean, that would be no surprise if he put up 180 yards each and every game.
Now, granted, his total yards from, you know, his average yards per touch this season was down this year. But I think what it all goes back to is, you know, you find a way to pay your best players, and I think that's going to now ultimately happen. But with that said, I think I will be shocked if they're able to hammer out a long-term deal with him. And if you place the tag on him again, you better be prepared for a carbon copy of what happened last offseason. You know, with him holding out all of training camp, not playing in the preseason, and all like that. I think you could see, and that's going to aggravate, if that happens, it's going to aggravate the living stew out of Steelers fans once again.
But not if they win the Super Bowl. It'll just be like, okay, that worked last year.
All right. Well, I can now see I'm more on the side of the fence now that they will give him the tag again.
Yeah, I think I was 51-49, and, you know, kind of – believe it or not, I do think that the James Conner injury is only a very small piece of it, but obviously the Steelers don't have the guy who they would have be the heir apparent. I mean, Stephen Ridley's done a nice job, and I imagine he's going to get a chance to come to camp next year. But, this is one of those decisions where they don't have, I'm still leaning toward yes, they would tag him slightly.
Well, if you had to bet money on it, then you would, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I bet money on it.
So it sounds to me that I've gone more over the side of the fence than you have.
Yeah, I don't think I've really changed much, and I'm just trying to figure out, because I haven't thought that much about it, whether James Conner injury has any impact on what the Steelers would do, and probably shouldn't. So,
do you think? Okay, let's assume they tag Bell. Are they drafting? Are they drafting a running back again?
Yeah, they'll draft a running. Yeah, I think they. I think you. That's a really good question. Was Connor's a meniscus or what was his? What was his knee injury?
Wasn't it MCL?
MCL, right?
So he should be ready to go by training camp.
It's a really good question. Do you draft a running back? Because look, Fitz's days are kind of numbered. And he's a special teams guy. So.
And Ridley, look, if Ridley does next to anything in the playoffs, he might end up getting.
He's going to come to camp, right? He's
coming to camp.
Terrell Watson's done. He's not going to be around. I think he drafts somebody, but probably I would say 4 through 7, not 1 through 3.
Well, what are you going to get 4 through 7 realistically, though? I mean, I know you can go down the list and all like this, but I mean, you got a third wrapped up in Connor, right? I mean,
yep.
If you spend anything between a first and a fourth on another running back, shame on you at this point, right?
No, I don't. Why? I mean, it's you're drafting to be the best team you can be in. It's a position where you don't know what you have.
Well, to me, if you do that,
I don't think you look at your past. You know who you took in the. You know, you look at your roster. You don't look at who you took where. You say, okay, you got a guy coming off an MCL. If you don't tag Bell, I mean, if you do tag Bell, you say, do you want to wait and have a guy we don't know about, or do you want to get another guy early here, and we'll have two guys that we take a look at and see who's better. I mean, I don't know if they can afford to take a running back if they tag Bell. I mean, you probably got other places you've got. You know, you put higher on the want list, but that means the next year you're really rolling the dice.
Well, if you franchise Bell this year and don't sign him to a long or this coming up offseason, don't get him signed to a long term deal, are you gonna give him the quarterback money the year after? You know, you would think he's done after that. You know?
Right, 400 more touches and shake hands.
Right. That's kind of the way I see it going now. All right, you picking up the fifth-year option on Bud Dupree?
Yeah.
I think you do as well, too. But the thing is, and what people need to remember listening to this, just because you pick it up, as long as he doesn't get injured, I know a lot of people are going to have some bad taste in their mouth right now with Ryan Shazier's injury being fresh and all, and the Steelers are going to be on the hook for that money in 2018. We've seen people, you know, back out of it, you know, in the past. You give Bud Dupree the fifth year with the hopes that he breaks out, and then it you get a savings of sort versus the franchise tag, you know. And obviously, if he falls on his face, well, you know, and he doesn't get injured, you could just walk, you know, shake his hand and walk away from it. So I think you do have to give him the fifth-year option and keep your fingers crossed. I think this is a little bit different. He's not Jarvis Jones bad, okay? But on the flip side, you know, I think people...
I wouldn't put him remotely in the conversation with Jarvis at this point.
Do you draft another edge rusher first?
Got to go. Gonna have to go inside first.
Yeah, you gotta get an inside guy. But you gotta get. I think you look. Keon Adams is an unknown quantity right now with the Steelers. Obviously, no James Harrison. Arthur Motes. You'll be surprised if he's back. You know, he's gone. Chicolo's just a backup. I mean, he's just
a guy. We've seen enough to know. I mean, look, he's did better than expected for me this year. So give him props. I don't mean to, you know, disparage him. He's been a good special teams player, and he's you know, if you need him for a couple games, he's got to play. So be it. But yeah, I don't think you want to be lining him up on your Super Bowl defense to be your starting edge guy.
So I think you need to consider in the first four rounds of getting another edge guy. You know.
Well, you're gonna you probably need a safety. You probably need a wide receiver at some point. You need.
I think you need an inside guy. You know, we talked about the wide. If you get a wide receiver, and we talked about this not long ago, I think you need a guy that has oh crap speed, a kind of guy you can get maybe fourth round. You know, that's the kind of guy I think you look for if you're going to draft a wide receiver. You know, obviously inside linebacker. I think you do need another ultra athletic safety that's more of the free safety type than the strong safety type.
You can probably move Davis, but yeah, you need a really really athletic guy. Like, look, if they went safety in the second round, I mean, I can't see necessarily taking a safety in the front, but I could see them going defense, going inside linebacker, safety first two rounds.
Yeah, very, very possible. You would be surprised if a quarterback's taken in the first four rounds, right?
I would be surprised, yes. Unless, you know, obviously all bets are off if Ben announces he's retiring, but I don't expect that. So, yeah, I'd be very surprised.
All right.
But then you are going quarterback the following year high because Landry's contract's up. So, you know, Dobbs, I would assume Landry or Dobbs won't be back 2 years from now.
All right, I still get a lot of tweets saying we need to draft another cornerback high.
Not opposed, but I don't. You know, it's not first or second on the defensive side of the ball for me. So, I mean, you know, fourth round. I mean, look, Cam Sutton, nobody knows what you got. So Hayden's going to be another decision. I assume everybody's leaning that they're going to pick him up for $7 million, but I'm not sure that's 100% given. It's likely. I don't think it's 100% given.
You mean $9 million with Joe Hayden, right?
Is it nine? Right, 3 years, $9 million a year, right? Yeah. So I don't think that's just ink the box that's a done deal.
Where you're at right now, and the way Mike Tomlin has spoken about Joe Hayden, he's back next year, right?
I would think he's back. Yeah.
That's still nine million bucks. Right, and I mean, do you try to get him to add some false years on the deal to lower that cap number?
They're in pretty good cap shape right now. I mean, in fact, they're in great cap. They're the best cap shape they've been. And this is, you know.
Oh, wait, no. I mean,
even the national guys didn't, you know, I don't even think, well, they get it wrong.
No. And I'm, you know, as soon as the season's over, I'm going to write about this. They're already crunched next year. I mean,
well, it looks crunch here, right? It's going up about $10 million. They got, you know, look,
you have to look. They're saying a team is crunch doesn't mean there's ways around it. I mean, there's obviously right. going to be some restructures. You're going to have Stephon.
The point is, they didn't restructure any of those guys last year that they could have. You know, we all, you know, people were writing, oh, you know, it's going to come, and they, you know, they didn't have to do much.
All right. I mean, they're going to be crunched. I wrote about this yesterday. There's going to be some probably a larger amount of cap casualties this year than the previous few years because they're going to have. Okay, Mike Mitchell, you keeping him around at $5 million?
Well, you certainly don't have his replacement on the roster.
Correct.
So the answer is most likely yes.
All right. He's one of.
But that's why Joe Hayden, I think, is at risk.
I think he is too, but on the flip side, if you let
Cam Sutton, you know, Artie Burns, you got Mike Hilton,
William Gay's probably not going to be back next year.
Our three guys from last year, DHB would be the most likely now of the three, and I can't see him back. So our three guys that we talked about all offseason, Motes, DHB, and Gay, you would assume that all three of those guys are gone, right? I mean, that's a fair assumption.
Right, right. Well, look, Arthur Motes isn't even under contract. DHB is, but there comes a time where you got to cut the cord there, and I think the offseason's time for that. William Gay, you know, he's already kind of being phased out, you know, dime stuff now.
He's done.
I mean, his number's not, you know, his $1.75 million base salary isn't damning, you know, by any stretch of the imagination, but it just comes a time. Do you move on or whatnot?
It'll be interesting to see if they you know, Cody Sensabaugh is not expensive. Is he going to be invited back? Justin Hunter's gone, probably.
What do you do with JJ Wilcox? I mean, you cut JJ Wilcox, right? 3.1 base salary next year.
No doubt. You know, he had a good first half, and those penalties, those special teams penalties, put him in the doghouse, and he hasn't done anything since. I mean, I think he's a useful player, but he's a useful player at $1.5 million, $3 million probably replaceable.
I think Joe Hayden's back in some form or fashion. Whether you have to massage that contract somehow, or just go ahead and eat, you know, go ahead and plan on eating, you know, $9 million base salary and a roster bonus of $1 million. I think that roster bonus is due in March. So we'll probably have a you know, fairly quick answer on it. We'll get more into this, but I just want to get
we got a long off season to talk about.
I want to get your initial thoughts on that. All right, that wraps up the Patriots Depot podcast. What seemed like Patriots Depot podcast for today. In the meantime, and until Monday, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com, hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. Been fun today, a little bit kind of different topics today, David, and hopefully not too many people dropped out halfway through it.
Yeah, good weekend of football. Enjoy it. We'll catch you on Monday. We'll know who the Steelers play in the first round of the 2017 season NFL playoffs. As always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.